Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
Is that War Rocket Ajax? To bring back his body?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax, brought to you this week by Common Knowledge. This is the internet's most destructive and dangerous comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you tonight?
It's week two of feeling a little sick. Not too sick to miss the show, not too sick to miss work, but just a little sick, a little sniffly. But I'm here, and I'm ready.
I am also feeling a little sick. I'm really sniffly.
I think it's just that time of year. It's that time of year where you feel a little sick, but it's okay, because the holidays are coming up, and it's Christmas.
That's right, Matt, it's Christmas. It's the most wonderful time of year, and we have a wonderful show for everyone, where we're not talking about Christmas. No, we have a special guest. Kel McDonald is here. We're going to be talking to her all about world building, and all the fun things you can do with that, as well as a bunch of other stuff. We're going to be talking about Buffy. We're going to be talking about smells. And here's a little teaser for you to keep you around for the interview. We might make some steps towards solving a mystery that none of us want to solve.
That's right. Doesn't that sound like a show you want to listen to? Of course it does. But before we get to that, Chris, we've got some business to take care of. So let's do that. Let's start with talking about our listener sponsor for this week, Common Knowledge. And that's not spelled the common way. That's spelled K-A-M-E-N.
Matt, let me ask you a question. Do you like superheroes?
I'm a noted fan.
Do you like space?
Love it. I've always been fascinated by space.
Do you like friendship?
Absolutely, I do.
What if I told you that there was a podcast about all three of those things? It's called Common Knowledge, where two best friends, Phil and Courtney, explore the wonderful world of Kamen Rider, Japan's favorite motorcycle riding superhero franchise.
Well, then I would want to hear more about that, Chris.
Well, let me tell you. They're currently in their first season, which is called The Forza Awakens, which is about Kamen Rider Forza, my favorite season of Kamen Rider, and one of the best superhero shows of all time, where they share some common knowledge that isn't exactly common knowledge about Kamen Rider Forza. They're on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podbean. They're on Twitter at Common Knowledge, K-A-M-E-N Knowledge. I am really, really interested in this show. As you know, Matt, I'm a big fan of episode-by-episode shows, and I love Kamen Rider Forza.
They've got some big stuff coming up. In the next few weeks, they're going to be doing the first Forza crossover movie, Movie Wars Megamax. That's going to be somewhere in early December that they're going to be covering that. So if Kamen Rider is something you're interested in, if space and friendship are things that you're interested in, definitely go check out Common Knowledge with Phil and Courtney, because it's a fun show. And they sponsored us here at War Rocket Ajax. They helped us out. You should go help them out.
That's right. They did the right thing. Now you do the right thing and go give them a listen.
All right, Chris, now that we have talked about the listener sponsor, and thank you to them for helping us out this week, let's talk about some of our newest supporters on Patreon.
That's right, Matt. These are the people who are heading over to patreon.com/warrocketajax, and they are kicking in as little as a dollar every month to help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills.
That is correct. And we just have one name to read out for this week for Patreon. It's Alex Holmes.
Oh, thank you, Alex.
If you want to be like Alex and help us out, help us keep the lights on here on War Rocket Ajax, you can head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in as little as $1 a month, as Chris said, and you will get stuff like ad-free episodes of the show. You will get stuff like bonus content. You will get stuff like commissioned art that we send out to our Patreon supporters. You will get physical rewards. We do a t-shirt every year for our top tier backers, and lots more. So if any of that sounds cool to you, oh, and line stepping privileges for our lists. That's the big one. If any of that sounds cool to you, head on over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in a little bit of money. With that, let's do some comforts and joys. Chris, what's bringing you comfort this week?
Matt, I had a momentous life event this week. I experienced something that you could scarcely imagine. I am a changed man.
Ooh.
Because I went to a comic book convention this weekend, and I actually, like, hung out with Rob Liefeld.
I saw the picture on Instagram. I saw you, Chad, and Rob all hanging out. And it did look like something magical.
Of course, you know, Chad and Rob and I worked on Deadpool Bad Blood together, which was a really, really great experience. And one of those books where we were literally sitting at the table reading it and laughing at our own jokes. We're very proud of it. But this was the first time that I've actually gotten to meet Rob in, like, that capacity. Like, I've run into him at cons before, like, as a fan, but getting to actually hang out with him and talk to him was awesome. He's super smart and, like, has been around in comics, you know, as a superstar for like 25 years. And so talking to him about stuff, like, he's full of great stories. He's full of, like, really interesting takes on things, things that, like, I would have never had the perspective on to come to the same conclusions. And it was just absolutely fantastic. If you ever get the chance to hang out with Rob Liefeld, I highly recommend it. But it was super fun. And it's one of the things I got to tell him about how, when I was 14 and I was a freshman in high school, I wrote a paper in school, defending Captain America number one, because there was a TV show that used to come on the Sci-Fi Channel called The Anti-Gravity Room. That was like a comic book and sort of sci-fi review show. I believe it was Canadian produced. And they did an episode with Kevin Smith as like a guest interview or guest reviewer. And he reviewed Captain America number one, the Rob Liefeld, Jeff Loeb, Heroes Reborn cap. And like, you know, did not like it. And so when we were assigned to write like a persuasive essay and rebut a point, I chose, for a school paper, to defend that issue of Captain America. I got an A on it, but it had a note that said, Chris, it's really time that you grow up a little bit and stop writing about comic books. Cut to 21 years later, and I'm hanging out with the guy who drew that comic that I'm working with and hearing all these great stories about Marvel in the early 90s and Image in the early 90s. It's one of those, you know, can't believe it's real moments, but I had a blast, and hanging out with Rob was awesome. So I have had that experience that I could not have even imagined having when I was a kid reading those comics. So it was really great.
So take that, teachers. Yeah. Sticking it to you.
Follow your dreams. Matt, what's given you comfort this week?
So I don't have one specific thing. I've got a handful of things that we've already talked about on the show to a degree. So I will just kind of run down some lightning round stuff. I have been playing more of Mario Odyssey, and it is absolutely delightful. I am reaching that point where, you know, last week when we were talking about the game, I was saying, I'm not running out of stuff to do. Well, now I'm reaching that point where the moons are getting harder to get. And so I am reaching that point where it's like, I'm trying to do the frustrating stuff. Not that the game has gotten bad at this point. It's just like, I knew I was going to reach this point where the ones that I'm like, I'll do that one later, are the ones I'm going to have to get if I want to get, like, 999 moons or whatever the max number of moons is.
Yet there's 1,000 of them.
Well, there's only like 800 and something, and you have to buy the rest if you're going to get to 999.
Well, I just buy them the first time I land in a place, because that's the easiest one to get.
Yeah, but you can buy like infinite moons after that. Really? With coins. Yeah, like after you beat Bowser and you're kind of in the post-game stuff. You can just buy.
I did not know that you beat Bowser.
sorry. If you haven't gotten to the Bowser part of the game, just you wait. It is so fucking great. So there's Mario Odyssey. I finally saw Thor Ragnarok. It was really wonderful. I think we should record some bonus content soon, Chris, where we talk about Thor and Mario.
That's probably a pretty good idea.
Because they're both important things to talk about. I do not think Thor Ragnarok is my favorite Marvel movie, but it's up there. I think I maybe like Spider-Man Homecoming more, but let's talk about it in some bonus content.
Homecoming's still number one for me, but Thor is a very close second.
And then one podcast update for everybody. Movie Fighters is going to be making a triumphant return this month. We have mostly recorded and our new episode. I won't spoil the surprise of what the movie we're watching is going to be, but you will definitely find it interesting and perhaps amusing that we were watching this movie. And to top it all off, my internet went out when we were in the middle of watching it, when we had like 15 minutes of the movie left. It made a fiber optic cable in my neighborhood become damaged and have to be repaired by my cable company.
That's like that cable realizes what it's transmitting and is like, I've gotta take this bullet for my boy Matt.
Well, I appreciate the sacrifice of that fiber optic cable. We are gonna post the episode though. We're gonna finish it up, finish recording probably Friday tomorrow as we're recording this, and then that should go up this week. So keep an eye out for that, Movie Fighters. And those are my comfort
Thanksgiving treat for everybody.
That's right. It might go up on Thanksgiving Day. We'll see. Speaking of Thanksgiving, we're either going to be recording an advance panel president special for the week of Thanksgiving or taking Thanksgiving week off. So be aware of that next week. You might get some panel president. You might have to do without us for a week, but I'm sure you'll survive. Those are our comforts and joys. Chris, or that's our comfort, not our joy, because Chris, you still got to give one. What is bringing you joy this week?
Matt, I watched a film this week that was good and made me mad. And that film was The Man from U.N.C.L.E., directed by Guy Ritchie, starring Henry Cavill and Armie Hammer, based on the classic television show starring Robert Vaughn. Have you seen this movie?
I have not seen that movie. I've heard good things about it.
Yeah, it's I know a lot of people who really, really liked it. And while I was at the con, Aiden ended up like renting it on Amazon and watching it because we had talked about being curious. And she liked it so much that Sunday night after Chad had gone home, we kind of had date night, and she watched it again with me watching it for the first time. That movie's a hoot, but admittedly, I am kind of a Guy Ritchie fan. Like, I even like those Sherlock Holmes movies. I think they're really fun. But this movie, Matt, made me furiously angry because Henry Cavill is so effortlessly charming and delightful in this movie. And at some points looks like Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
When he's out walking around. We could have had it all, Matt. We could have had it all. It turns out I have had such negative associations with this man for years because he is in two of the worst movies I've ever seen as one of the best characters. He has it in him. He has it in him. He could have been a great Superman, Matt. It's all there. It really is. And I was watching it. There is a scene. It's in the opening of the movie. Armie Hammer plays Ilya Kuryakin. And he's, you know, Armie Hammer's 6'5". He's a very large man. And Henry Cavill's character is trying to get away from East Berlin. And Armie Hammer's character at one point like runs after his car and grabs onto the trunk and tries to stop it, but just by planting his feet. And the woman driving the car says, "Why don't you shoot him?" And Henry Cavill looks at him and goes, "You know, I just don't feel like it's the right thing to do." And I was like, fuck this movie. Fuck this world. This is a fallen world. It's we are in the Upside Down, and I don't like it.
Why are you blaming the movie for making Henry Cavill good?
I'm not. I was just like, that movie was so good, and he's so good in it, that I was angry. That I was angry retroactively on another level at these other movies that I've been angry at on multiple levels since I saw them. Like, I would highly recommend seeing The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It's got really, really good stuff. The soundtrack is really great. Just really fun. And it's also, like, just super filled with subtext between those two main characters. So if that's your thing, absolutely give that a watch.
Yeah, if anything, this lifts the blame off of Henry Cavill's shoulders. You don't have to blame Henry Cavill anymore.
I will admit that I have been wrong about him as an actor, but I'm not wrong about that performance in that film. I just no longer blame him.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, Man from U.N.C.L.E. I'm doing a disservice to the movie by talking about it in the context of other roles. It's really fun. Everybody should see it. Very stylish. Cable's great. Armie Hammer is actually great too. And it's Hugh Grant is actually really great in it as well. Matt, what is your joy this week?
Well, I just want to tell you, if you want to keep enjoying Guy Ritchie unabashedly, don't ever watch the movie Revolver.
I'm gonna watch that fucking Charlie Hunnam King Arthur movie next and see if maybe I actually like that one too.
Okay. My joy for this week is something that you actually recommended to me personally, Chris, because you told me that Aiden has been playing this game and essentially remarked, Matt would love this. And she was right. It is an app that you can get on your phone called HQ. And unlike other apps that are games, HQ can only be played at 2 times per day, 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time, because it is a live game show. It is a trivia show where a host will ask 12 questions, and if you get all 12 questions right, here's what makes it sound really scammy, but it is in fact a real thing. If you get all 12 questions right, you win money. You win real money. The pot for each game on a weekday is $1,000. And then on the weekends, you can win more. They have more. But here's the catch. Okay, so I'm going to take a little bit of joy time to brag. This week on – I guess it was Monday. Had to be Monday. I played HQ on the afternoon show and won. I got all 12 questions right. The pot was $1,000. I won $5.39. Because it is split between everyone who wins. So if like 200 people win, you get like $5. If only one person wins, they win $1,000. But, you know, it's kind of like the lottery. Like, if you win, but a lot of other people do, you have to split it. But part of it, it's not even really the winning money that is appealing to me. It's doing this trivia show every day. I have missed playing daily trivia on my phone so much ever since the trivia game that I used to play like back in like, I don't know, 2012, 2013 stopped updating. And it was called like, I keep wanting to say it was Quark or something like that. I think that's wrong, but it was called something like that. And it was like trivia updated every day and I loved it. And this, there are definitely some downsides to HQ because there's a live host and they're trying to be funny. There's like a running chat at the bottom, even though I did figure out that if you swipe to the right, you can make that chat go away. So
he started telling you at the top of each show, like, hey, if the chat's distracting, you can get rid of it.
Yeah, I could not be happier to be rid of that chat because it is a bunch of annoying garbage. But also, like, the hosts, they're not bad. They have some canned written jokes that they put in between each question. And sometimes they just misspeak and it's very obnoxious. Like the one I did it tonight and there was a question about Jonathan Swift and the host accidentally said Jonathan Smith and it made me furious for a second. It didn't affect the question. Unlike the question on the screen said Jonathan Swift. And I haven't run into any questions that I think are just actively wrong yet. Like, they haven't done one where the answer is just wrong. But this Jonathan Swift, Jonathan Smith thing annoyed me very slightly. But for the most part, I'm enjoying HQ. Thank you for telling me about it, Chris. And by virtue of telling people about it on this podcast, I have potentially increased the number of people playing, which means that there could be more winners and that people will win even more minuscule amounts of money.
Yeah, and we should say, like, it goes from, like, I think it starts with, like, 65,000 people.
I played it with as many as 80,000 people.
Yeah, and then everyone who misses a question is out. So it winnows it down over the course of the 12.
You have to get every question right. If you miss a question, you're out.
Kind of fun to watch Aiden playing it, even, because, you know, it's a game show. It's a live game show on your phone.
Yeah. You can get extra lives where you get another chance, but I think you have to, like, recommend the app to people or something like that. So if you sign up for it, say that I recommended you, and then I'll get a bunch of extra lives.
It's basically like backing the Patreon.
Yeah, you'll be helping me out. All right. That is our comforts and joys, Chris. Let's talk about some of the comics that came out this week.
Matt, we got some weird ones this week.
We do. What do we want to start with? Do we just want to start with Fence, or do we want to start with Batman Who Laughs?
Let's start with Fence. It's been a while since we've talked about a lot of Boom Studios books, and this one I really liked. This is the new fencing-based romance comic out from Boom Studios by C.S. Picat and Joanna the Mad, with Joanna LaFuente on colors. The solicitation text for this comic says that it's great for fans of Check Please or Yuri on Ice, which I love that because it's a great code word way of saying that, hey, this is a gay sports romance. Without saying that and scaring off any retailers who would not want that in their store. But that's exactly what you're getting in this comic in a really, really fun way.
It's also a way of saying, hey, this is manga.
Yes. Because it is. It super is. This is going to sound like a complaint. And it's not, because it's something that I actually found, like, very charming and enjoyable about it. Every line in this comic is what you expect the next line in this comic to be. Like, it's always scrappy young fencer from the wrong side of the tracks, whose dad was an Olympic champion, but he left his mom, is going into this competition, and all the rich kids are there, and he's going to face this undefeated guy that he is absolutely going to be smooching by the end of the story. It hits the beats so reliably that I think if it was any less fun than it is, and I think it's really, really fun, it would suffer from being really predictable. Instead, it comes off as not like winking at the audience, but definitely like, you like, hey, we all know what we're here for. We're here for a story of these rivals from opposite, you know, like cross-class rivals who are going to end up falling in love with each other. So let's hit these beats, everybody. I don't know if it's as well-crafted as Check Please. In fact, I'm sure that it's not. But that is saying something, because I think Check Please is actually really exceptional, what I've read of it, and definitely goes for the slow burn in a way that I am anticipating Fence to not do. I love sports mangas in general, and getting like a sports manga style, you know, yaoi romance is like really fun. So I would highly recommend this book. I think it's absolutely enjoyable for everybody.
Going from a comic that is fun to one that I would certainly not describe as fun, Batman Who Laughs. This is by James Tynion in the IV, with art by Riley Rossmo. I didn't dislike the comic, but it certainly goes to some gruesome places.
It absolutely is like really gruesome. I did like it though, and I'll tell you why. Because this isn't. It goes a step beyond just being what if Batman was the Joker. You know, like it goes to not just what if Batman was the Joker, but what if Batman and the Joker were combined into something that was terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, this is what if Batman became the Joker.
Yeah. And the explanation that's given in the book is that this, you know, this version of Batman's nightmares, because I think I do really love the idea that everybody from the Dark Multiverse is a literal nightmare. Like, this is something you're afraid of. It's your greatest fear. And I feel like that justifies a lot of the gruesomeness as well. But it's explained in the book that when the Joker dies, when Batman kills the Joker, he gets dosed with this neurotoxin that rewires his brain. So he's as methodical as Batman, but as evil as the Joker. So he's not chaotic. He's as smart and as methodical and as dedicated, just on the complete opposite end of the scale. And I think that's a really fun idea.
Yeah, I mean, he's still Bruce Wayne. Like, it's just like all the other Batman, you know, dark universe, dark multiverse Batman that we've seen, right? They're still Bruce Wayne. They've just got some twist to them. And I think this is a clever one. It's just like seeing stuff like Batman shooting the entire Bat family after they figure out that there's something wrong with him. Or, you know, going into Crime Alley. I guess the Joker by himself does this to make Batman kill him. You're going into Crime Alley and shooting just random kids' parents to try to set Batman off. Like, it's some dark, dark stuff in here. Oh, and the stuff he does to Superman's family. The stuff he does to John and Lois, like, it's a lot to take in. And maybe verges on the side of being too gruesome, but it is certainly in service of something.
Yeah. I think it can get away with a lot by virtue of being so ridiculously over the top that it feels like a bad dream. In a way that I think is on purpose. It's not just like, you know, we've talked a lot about comics that are like over the top in a bad way and that get gruesome and weird and uncomfortable. But the idea of the Joker literally lining up families of parent kid and then like having them round the corner in Crime Alley so that he can shoot the parents, like. And when it pulls back, it's a line of like 100 people that are all being kind of herded. That's nonsense. Like that's so ridiculous that it feels like something out of a nightmare. And I think I think this book can get away with what it does by virtue of playing that up. Like Batman shooting the Batman family. Like it's literally Batman spinning around with two Uzis. It's the bad dream you wake up from and you go, well, wait a second, that doesn't make sense.
One small detail that I want to talk about, and this has been from the get-go in Dark Knight's Metal. Whoever chose the lettering scheme for the Batman Who Laughs, where it is this red text on these black balloons, and the font itself is this kind of like scratchy looking font. It's goddamn near unreadable.
I actually noticed that a lot in this one. And I don't know if it's because maybe it's just a the Comixology. I hope the print version is easier to read than this Comixology version, because it is, it's very close to being unreadable.
It's the combination of the colors and the font itself. It's not good. I really wish they had not done this for all of that character's text balloons, because he talks more than any of the other Dark Multiverse Batman. Ugh. All right, that's it for that complaint. Let's move on to the last comic we want to talk about. It is the WWE Survivor Series Special 2017. This is a weird comic book.
This is a real weird comic book. It's so weird that it starts being weird on the cover, which has Nia Jax and Naomi, who are not featured in the book. They didn't get booked tonight.
There is no story about Nia Jax and Naomi in this comic, even though they are on the cover. It's also this like weird photorealistic painting. Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg look just like a photo of Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg, slightly arted up. It is a strange looking cover. There are six stories in here. The main one is about the Montreal Screwjob by Dennis Hopeless and Lucas Wernick.
And I think that's the one we need to talk about the most. Like,
it's the only one we need to talk about at length. Debut is about Kurt Angle's debut. It's by Box Brown and Rodrigo Lorenzo. That one is only weird because his opponent is never named. They never talk about how Sean Stasiak was his opponent in his debut.
Yeah, he is definitely this story. I think could have been drawn a little better to get over what was happening. Poor Sean Stasiak not getting this check for being in this comic.
Then there's a Gobbledygooker comic by Derek Fridolfs that's pretty funny.
Pretty fun.
There is a Goldberg Brock Lesnar story by Kevin Panetta and Kendall Good that is very similar to the Bill Goldberg WWE 24 that's up on the WWE Network right now. There's a Million Dollar Man Undertaker story by Lan Pitts and Kelly Williams that's great.
I really did like that one.
And then there is a
I love that this is the in continuity origin of the Undertaker. Not that there was a guy named me, Mark Callis, that Paul Lee dangerously managed in WCW for a couple of years.
No, there's a town Undertaker who gets bribed by the Million Dollar Man to come be part of Survivor Series with bodies, because that's what the Undertaker wants. My
favorite part of this story, when the Tombstone Piledriver is illustrated, the guy's head is about a foot off the ground.
Yeah, there's definitely some photo reference in that image. And then the last story is about the Shield's debut, and I wish the art was better. It was by Aaron Gillespie and Tim Laddie, and Roman Reigns looks very weird in that story. Like,
I honestly had a hard time telling when it was Roman and when it was Seth Rollins speaking.
I don't want to like say too much bad about the art in there, because it's just a particular stylistic choice. It's just a weird stylistic choice for that story. So let's talk about the Montreal Screwjob story. This is an extremely weird comic where wrestling is not fake. And so we have to have a story where Bret Hart is screwed out of the title. Shawn Michaels goes and meets Vince McMahon and is told by Vince McMahon that Bret Hart can't lose. But at no point is it rigged. Like, Bret Hart's mad because the match ended too early, not that
Shawn
he
Michaels
didn't...
is mad because the match ended too early.
Well, Bret Hart is too.
Well, Bret Hart's mad because it's good. Okay.
in the world of this story, the anger is over the match being ended before it's over, not the finish being a secret that Bret Hart didn't know about.
Yeah. I kind of love this because the WWE is fiction, right? Like it's wrestlers playing wrestlers with an audience playing an audience, but there's a canon in that fiction. And in the canon of that fiction, wrestling is real. In the canon of that fiction, like these people like get into matches to to settle grudges or win championships or because they're reaping souls or whatever. But the Montreal Screwjob is also a piece of in-story WWE canon, but it can't be because the entire point of the Montreal Screwjob is that there was a script that Shawn Michaels and Vince McMahon went off of with Brett adhering to the script. So they have to, like, the fun thing about this comic is that Dennis Hopeless and Lucas Wernick have to figure out how to present the Montreal Screwjob as canon in a world where the fights are real.
Yeah. It's bananas. It's like, but yeah, you're not wrong. I kind of love it because not only is it presented as a real fight, I actually really like, by the way, Lucas Wernick's art in here. It's realistic enough with also while also being kind of like cartoony, like larger than life Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart.
There's also, he draws the hell out of Goldust getting a super kick.
He sure does. Also, there is an amazing scene in here where Shawn Michaels goes fishing with Triple H and Scott Hall.
Yes.
I would love to know if that ever happened. Like, if any of those guys ever went fishing. It's such a weird choice. Like, this thing is just so full of such weird choices, and I love it.
Here's the weirdest choice and kind of the most WWE choice of the entire story. The premise of this comic is that Shawn was the victim in the Montreal Screwjob.
Yeah. In the world of this story, Shawn Michaels is as in the dark as Bret Hart is.
Yeah. In the world of this story, Shawn Michaels is the one who suffers. Because everyone thinks he couldn't beat him, which I think is hilarious.
Well, here are the last captions of the story. I was 5 minutes away, maybe less, from being two-time champ, for real. But that's not what they saw. HBK won't be the story. The early bell, the phantom tap, the screw job, that's what they'll remember.
So this Montreal Screwjob comic ends with a shot of a sad Shawn Michaels.
With the title on his shoulder.
That is the most WWE thing. That is the purest piece of WWE history. Like, WWE's attitude toward its own history.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Absolutely. All right.
There might as well have been a sign in the background of that panel that was just like, WCW sucks and always sucked.
The competition, as Vince McMahon puts it in the comic. That's going to do it for our comic segment. Chris, it is time for us to talk to Kel McDonald, so let's talk to Kel.
Let's do it. Joining us for the program this week, we are pleased as punch to welcome back a very special guest. She's one of our good friends, and you will know her from her work on Misfits of Avalon, on Sorcery 101, on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, The High School Years, and a bunch of other assorted great projects. Kel McDonald, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Hi, guys. I'm doing all right.
This is, I think, the most pressing question. How has being War Rocket Ajax's resident werewolf expert changed your life?
Oh, it hasn't been that different because people always come to me for werewolf knowledge, so it's just new people asking me werewolf questions.
Is there any new, like, werewolf knowledge that you've discovered? Because I have to imagine that there's a finite amount of werewolf knowledge out there.
Nothing new since I was last on the show. I did learn some new vampire knowledge.
Please share.
Okay, so the reason why vampires burn in the sun is because the budget for Nosferatu couldn't afford a flashy fight scene at the end.
Really? Is that like, yeah. it's not from like any vampire lore?
I know, because they always had vampires are active at night, but they never had the sun hurts them. So when making the Nosferatu movie, they ran out of money toward the end, so their solution to save money is, what if the heroes just open the curtain and the sun destroys Nosferatu?
I mean, that's kind of a brilliant solution.
Because I was on a panel at Rose City where we were talking about folklore and what is quote-unquote real folklore. And it got brought up stuff like why werewolves are hurt by silver is because the guy who made the Wolfman movie just thought that it would be cool if someone had silver bullets because he liked the Lone Ranger.
Wait, so the Lone Ranger had silver bullets first?
Yes. No, yeah, werewolves are hurt by silver because the guy who made the Wolfman movie in the 40s liked the Lone Ranger and thought it was cool the Lone Ranger fires silver bullets, and so he decided to put that in his movie.
So I guess there is new werewolf knowledge to learn.
Is you can make up all of the things you want about werewolves. That was kind of our point, is like, there is no set in stone werewolf lore. There is no such thing as real werewolves.
Well, hold on, Kel. You're going to get werewolf news all over us right now.
Yeah.
Kel, it's been a while since you've been on the show. We talked a little bit off mic about the stuff that you're working on right now. And you're currently working on a pitch that I find fascinating, because you sent us over, like, not just character designs, but, like, setting designs and a map of a city. And I'm really curious and kind of fascinated to know, like, where you start building a world like that.
We should tell the listeners, like, what I'm working on first. The premise is, it's for a story called You Are the Chosen One. And it is 23 kids all get the same sort of prophecy dream. I actually wrote down exactly what the prophecy is. It's a king will die, a dark power will rise, you are required to stop it. And it's how all 23 kids react to getting that dream. So, like, you have one kid who at the very beginning is going to wake up and go, that was a weird dream. And then he goes back to sleep, and we don't check in with that kid ever again. Because that is the extent that he thought about and cared about the prophecy.
Now, what is the significance of the number 23? Is it because of that?
That was how many... No, that was basically... I was aiming for 30, and at 23, I ran out of ideas that I thought were interesting. So that's why there's 23.
So it has nothing to do with the number of chromosomes in the human body or that Jim Carrey movie?
No, it has nothing to do with either of those things.
Okay.
Wait, is that a different movie than 21 Grams? Are those two separate movies, Matt?
Yes, 21 Grams and the number 23 are two separate movies.
Okay. So you were planning on 30 and just ran out of steam?
It was basically, I was like, I think I have enough to work with after I hit 23.
See, I love that, because I just did a convention last weekend, and we were on a panel talking about the writing process, and one of the things that Chad and I always have a hard time with, and so we like to talk about it, is that, like, when people read the book, they're not going to be going, like, well, I wish there were seven other people in here. Nobody's going to know. Like, it's just you that knows.
Right. Like, if you find older... like, clips of me talking about it, I'll say 30, but then I was like, nah, 23 is fine. But so I basically, like, built it around there. I decided, since it's a parody of, like, fantasy Chosen One narrative things, I decided to give it a medieval setting. I figured I could go either medieval or sci-fi, and I would rather go for medieval setting, because then it's harder for the kids to communicate with one another. Because a big part of it is that they think they're the only one.
They know they're not, they don't know they're in a book that's not called You're the Chosen 23.
And then the other half of the idea is they all just assume that they're the only one. Because if you listen to the wording of a prophecy, it does not say they are the one. It just says they're required. So they are also kind of in a Rube Goldberg machine of destiny.
That is an amazing turn of phrase, Kel.
So you have, like, one kid tries to steal a horse and the horse escapes, and then another kid finds the horse later on. So that's sort of like the kids are all required, but they don't necessarily need to make it to the end. I started with the kids and what I wanted all their stories to be. And then some of the kids, their stories had holes, and I started to build the world based on what I needed to tell those kids' stories. So the city map that you saw, that's the capital. And I figured, well, since at least like six of the kids all live in the capital, I need to know where they're all hanging out in relation to one another and who's going to run into who.
Right. And this city that you sent over, it's designed like a water lily.
Yeah, because since they're getting the dream from, like, a higher power, I was like, well, I need to design a religion around this higher power. Since royalty frequently gets tied into religion, like, whatever iconography I am giving the religion is probably also going to repeat for the royalty. Like, so the city's is on a delta that looks like a water lily. And that gets repeated in their religion a lot. And then one of the character designs I sent you for, like, the princess character, Elizabeth, she has, like, water lily-looking fabric designs on her shoulders. And then there is a queen, Maya, who her crown looks kind of like a lily.
I also love that there's a section on this map that we're looking at labeled Smeldbab.
Yeah.
Because I think that's an important part that gets left out of a lot of fantasy.
There's going to be, like, one kid lives in, like, the slums, and where the slums are going to be. So it'll be like, well, here's the industrial leather tanning stuff, and that's going to smell shitty, so rich people aren't going to want to live there. So kind of stuff like that.
One thing that definitely gets left out of a lot of fantasy stuff set in medieval settings is that probably everything smells bad. Like, everything on Game of Thrones has to smell terrible, right?
Yes.
Just constant bad smells.
Right.
Oh, that.
But there's, like, worse smells that they're gonna, the rich people are going to not want to live near.
I was going to my thoughts on what smells the worst in Game of Thrones, but, like, we don't have to discuss that, but I am wondering, Kel, if you have any thoughts on what smells the worst.
Well, there is a place called Flea Bottom Alley that they described as having a torrent of shit, so I'm gonna guess that smells the worst.
That's true. That's a good one. Matt, any thoughts?
I mean, I'll defer to Kel on that one. I mean, I don't think there's any competing with that.
I think just any of those dudes on the wall, like, under the furs, like, just awful, because you know they're not taking baths.
The first place that came to mind was the wall. The wall has to be terrible, absolutely awful.
Well, see, the wall is frozen all the time, so when stuff dies, it is not going to smell as bad when it rots.
That's true enough.
So, like, the capital probably smells worse than the wall.
I'm just, like, specifically talking about, like the joint areas on those dudes.
I mean, yeah, those will smell bad, but I still think, like, the river of shit that runs through the slums of the capital probably smells worse.
This is good bonus content.
This is saying end the show. This is never, this is not bonus.
Yeah.
So, Kel, here's what I'm really interested in by what you're saying. You described this as a parody.
Well, maybe meta-textual stuff, like commenting on it rather than deconstruction is a better word.
Well, and I know that that's something that you've done before. Like, Misfits of Avalon was kind of your sort of twist on magical girls with the premise of what if there was a team of magical girls that were shitty people, which I still think is, like, very, very good. But the idea of doing something that's a parody or, like, a metatextual commentary or even, like, a genre pastiche, that you would start with that idea and then start with the smaller things, and each small thing leads to building a bigger thing, up to the point where you're like designing cities and religious iconography. Is that how it always, like,
that's how I usually work. Like, I remember I talked on your show about The Better to Find You With and the series that that takes place in, which is, I jokingly said, is a future where there aren't any cars and horses have gone extinct. And I did seriously say, I don't want to draw cars and I don't want to draw horses. So if everyone is taking public transit, what's a city where, how is like a futuristic city going to look if there are no like cars? And so if you look at that, it's a lot of levels to the city. Like there are outside sort of balcony sidewalkway things. The only people that do have cars are like law enforcement, and they're still much tinier. I basically like decide what I want to do and then pull at how is that going to affect everything else.
At what point does that become harder than just drawing a horse every now and then?
Well, the thing is at least for the city between Better to Find You With stuff, is I like to draw architecture. I do not like to draw horses. So designing all that architecture is based on things I want to draw. So for me, it is not that bad. For someone else, that is, I have just described their hell.
So is, like, as the is the balance for you? Because like when I sit down to write something or like, you know, start like a whole new like from scratch premise, which I rarely do, and people who are familiar with my work know that I love it when other people have done the work for me, but I don't generally think in terms of a lot of visuals because I'm not also drawing the story. Do you? Like what is the process like where you're like, okay, here's what I want this story to be combined with here's what I want to draw and what I don't want to draw. How does that conversation that we would usually see between like a writer and an artist manifest itself in your design process?
So, again, it depends on sort of the thing and what I'm planning to do with it. So like for the City Between books, I wanted it also to stay black and white. So when designing like the fashion of that world, it is a lot of like strong blacks are involved in everyone's outfits or patterns because there's going to be no other shading or colors to make things stand out. Whereas the character designs I made for You're the Chosen One, I am thinking about it. I'm probably going to color it. So it's more about making sure the shapes are clear. And I also, when going into it, wanted to make sure all the kids have fairly different body types.
I'm fascinated by this because I love the idea of world building. And I feel like people, a lot of people get hung up on world building or they like the world building more than they like the storytelling. Do you find that is something that you run up against where you enjoy one part of it more than another?
I like world building, but I also want the world building to always serve the story. And so there are going to be large gaps in You're the Chosen One's world building because those are things that aren't important to the story. Whereas City Between, I'm being more like the world will develop as I work on it because that is designed to be like a short story in this part of the world, a short story in a different part of the world. And each of those short stories are going to develop different aspects of it. So when both of those projects are finished, the City Between world will probably have less holes in it simply because it's designed to fit more stories and jump around more. Whereas this one is more like, if it doesn't serve this specific story and commentary, I don't care about it.
How often do you have an idea that just won't fit?
I sometimes get not so much, like, I get ideas that are I describe them as setups rather than stories. And so I come up with a lot of setups and only develop the ones that I think have a story that go with them, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because, like, if I can't figure out what happens after the first five pages, then there isn't enough there to develop.
See, that is another problem that I run into. I love those first five pages. No idea what happens on page 20. Very rarely.
Whereas I like to plan everything out. I knew how Sorcery 101 ended when I started it 12 years ago.
Do you tend to start from the finish and work your way backwards? Or do you just, like, have an
end? I outline. The thing I sent you has an outline in it. So you can see exactly how far I've developed this story.
And there's a spreadsheet.
Yeah. Because I told you I made all the characters first. So the spreadsheet is the character's name, how long they last in the story, why they fail at being the chosen one, and their effect on the overall story.
That is an admirable amount of work. How have you ever gone into something and with the idea of, well, I'll just figure it out when I get there?
Misfits of Avalon was kind of like that.
Okay.
Like, I had a basic idea of where it was going, but that was the most loosey-goosey with what was going to happen next, because I pitched it really fast.
Like, over the course of that one, did you, like, run up to things where you were like, wow, I really wish I had outlined this because I have no idea what's coming next, and you just had to figure it out in the moment of creating it?
There was a part, I think the end was the part I most was like, I don't know what I'm doing, because I had two ideas for the end, and one was a very goofy anticlimactic ending, and one was a more, like, epic battle, traditional magical girl one, and I was really unsure which way to go based on the tone of everything else.
I'm genuinely fascinated, but like that you start with the idea and just work your way up to religious iconography is fascinating to me. Do you prefer like doing something like this and having like control over making every aspect of the world to kind of serve that larger story, as opposed to like the work you've done on Buffy, where you're not just like going into an established world, but you're going into an established world telling stories between other stories, where like you know what is off limits because it was done on the TV show and other comics. Yeah. Like, you know what
the Buffy was definitely the hardest thing to write. It was not only that, but also in particular the Buffy stories I wrote, because they had to happen in between episodes, nothing was allowed to change. And my favorite thing to do is to have character development and growth. So like with Buffy the high school years, I had to get everything back to the status quo by the end of it. And that was much harder for me than sitting down and figuring out this sprawling epic.
So what did you draw upon, like, when you have that world that you're not in control of every aspect of? Like, you know, superhero comics, for instance. Like, what do you look at to inform your stories when you know that, like, the characters can't change because they have an arc that's already prescribed? You can't, like, blow up a city or tear down a building. What do you look at to inform those?
You'll probably notice that Buffy is the only thing that I don't own that I've written.
Yeah.
And that is because Buffy is the only thing I love enough to put me through, like, the working with those constraints. Because if someone asked me to draw stuff for Marvel and DC, I would probably say no, because I'm not as interested in them. But for Buffy, since it is all of the, or especially the stuff that's set during high school, it is all supposed to be about like high school problems turned into supernatural problems. So for Buffy, I like brainstormed with some friends high school problems. And then try to figure out what their supernatural counterpart would be. And that's how I came up with my Buffy ideas.
That's amazing.
So yeah, I had a bunch of like ones that I didn't use either because the show already used them or they would be better suited to a character that it was not in Buffy yet. Or because I was only allowed to write during season one.
That's a weird time to be writing Buffy stories.
Yeah.
But I think that we can all agree, like, there's a lot of problems facing teens in high school. Yeah. Like, you know, there's pressure to get into college.
It's also, like, for stuff like Buffy, all of the weirder and funner ideas I have are not about the main characters. So if you ask me to write anything set in the Buffy universe, but it has to be during the seasons where Buffy's in high school, there is one episode where Buffy goes to a fraternity party and they find out that the fraternity is sacrificing girls to a giant snake demon in the basement. And my immediate thought whenever I go back to that episode is, I wonder at what point during rush week do they check to see if the new pledges are okay with murdering girls and feeding them to a giant snake?
I feel like there's a lot of things in Buffy that, like, I would love to see the run up to.
Yeah.
Like, how did it get to this point?
Exactly. And that's usually where, like, my ideas go, but they were all ideas that aren't about Buffy, so I couldn't use them. Like, one thing I pitched that they said I couldn't do unless the series goes on for a lot longer is I wanted to do Buffy season one from Cordelia's point of view, because Cordelia doesn't know that Buffy's the Slayer yet in season one.
That's pretty good. So basically you wanted to do like a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead, but for Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
That's a solid pitch, Kel. That's an easy sell.
All the stuff that I've done has been kind of meta commentary on different types of stories, and it's because that's where my brain usually goes.
Do you feel like the meta commentary stuff, especially in modern genre fiction, like there's so much, and there's so much that's currently available, that the only way to tell a new and interesting story is to at least partially comment on, like, what exists already?
No, I think it's possible to do something, like, without going the metatextual route. It's just, Blue Delaquanti always does really cool stuff in sci-fi genre that I think is very original. It maybe builds off ideas that people touched on before, but I never see them explored the way she explores them.
So, Kel, in addition to new werewolf facts, new vampire facts, world building, city design, religion, religious iconography making, what else have you been up to lately?
I've been trying to get better at designing covers, so I've actually been going through Buffy the Vampire Slayer episodes and making kind of title cards for them, like the Batman the Animated Series title cards.
Go on.
So I basically do roughs for every episode, and right now my Patreon backers can vote on which one I finish. Like, so I have three done so far, and I just finished doing all the roughs for season two, and I'm about to put the vote up for that.
Did you put these up, or are they only on Patreon?
The finished ones are up on my website. I'm about to link you.
Okay, please do. Because I love a good title card. And I think any story that has a title card is possibly inherently superior to any story without.
You have to click on each individual post to see them, but they're all there.
All right, let's have a look at these. We've got Angel here. That guy.
Because the episode 7 where she finds out he's a vampire is entitled Angel.
Right.
And I have my notes. I used the Sailor Moon color scheme for that.
I noticed.
Yeah. And then the favorite one that I did out of all of them is for episode 3, Witch, which is the one where curses are getting cast on all the cheerleaders. And
yeah, and this one is, I think, the most Batman the Animated Series of all of them.
The reason why I did this sort of exercise is I looked at all the Sorcery 101 like chapter titles, and I kind of went to the same like over the shoulder character's head sort of shot again and again. So my rules for these is that the characters' faces can't be in them, which would force me to go either more graphic or stick to arranging inanimate objects in an odd way. And then the other one that got picked from season 1 was for The Harvest, which is the second episode. And that one I'm lukewarm on. And that's like the master's hand is supposed to be making like a scythe around kids that would be dancing at the bronze.
I got distracted thinking about the bronze and how like all of these children go to a bar all the time.
It's not a bar, it's a club.
I know what it is. It's still very wild that that happens. So there's nothing else that you like enough to work on it without like building the world?
Yeah, I'm not super drawn to writing about other people's characters. Like, I never was a fanfic writer. Like, I think it's great for people that want to do fan fiction with their free time or want to write for work for hire stuff. It's just, I'm more interested in my stuff.
Have you encountered that from the other end where people are writing fan fiction about your stuff?
I've been sent, I think, like 3 fanfics for Sorcery 101.
Did you read them?
I did.
Was it weird?
I think I have them saved on my computer. One was dirty, so that was okay. Weird. I got more fan art than fan fiction, which makes sense because fan art takes less time to do.
Yeah. That's right, everybody. Writing, it's so much harder and more time consuming than art. Kel McDonald, I am glad that you have stuff coming down the pipeline, as well as a massive library of great work already out. But I think I'm out of questions, so it's time for us to turn things over.
Oh. I also have a podcast I've been doing.
Oh, wait, no, like, you can plug it at the end.
Okay.
Okay. It's time for us to turn... It's time for us to turn things over to our listeners on Twitter to see what questions they have for you. And Matt, if our listeners want to get in on these strange discussions we have every week here on the show, how exactly can they go about that?
Well, Chris, the way that these medieval peasants can go about asking questions on Twitter is to wake up and realize that they're living in a pile of filth, smelly, terrible, awful, stinky filth, and do something about it. The prophecy that they've heard is that, hey, you should smell better. Invent deodorant already and plumbing. Then, once they do those things, they get some of these bad smells out of their lives. They can go to twitter.com and sign up for an account. Follow the Matt D. Wilson, that's me, the ISB, that's Chris, and wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. That's 6:30 Pacific. And watch out for the call for questions that one of us will put out. And you can ask questions just like these questions you're going to hear for Kel McDonald. The first one we have here is from Barely Sushi on Twitter, Mike Donahue. The question is, what is the best Muppet movie, and what is the worst Muppet movie?
Best Muppet movie. I'm really like Muppet Treasure Island.
That's a good answer. The one that's close to my heart is always going to be Great Muppet Caper. It's the one that I had on VHS and that I watched all the time. But Muppet Treasure Island is also a very good one. Chris, do you have a favorite Muppet movie?
Muppets Take Manhattan.
Also a good one.
That's also a good one, yeah. That's what I had to think about what was the best Muppet movie, because there's a lot of good ones.
Surprisingly not Muppet Christmas Carol for me, which I think would have somebody just lost a bet on what I would say was my favorite.
Muppet Christmas Carol is also good. Kel, what do you think is the worst Muppet movie?
Muppet's Wizard of Oz, I think.
Ooh,
okay, I didn't
even know about that one.
I think it's probably between that one or Muppets from Space.
I was okay with Muppets from Space. I think the Wizard of Oz one is worse.
Okay. I will take that as holy writ. Let it be known that Muppets Wizard of Oz is the worst Muppet movie. Here's a question from Tales to Enrage on Twitter. Mostly Stuffing Now is his Twitter name right now. He asks, what's the most inane motivational advice you've gotten or read, and how mad did it make you?
I don't know, because I feel like all of the really bad motivational advice that I've gotten is more motivational on how to deal with depression and is clearly from people who do not have depression.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when people are like, well, you should just eat blank, or you should get out and exercise. Like,
just tell yourself to feel better.
Yeah, that's wrong.
My favorite one I've ever seen along those lines is people with depression don't need pills, they just need a good pair of running shoes. And it's like, well, no, exercise can help, but also
it doesn't cure depression.
Correct,
yeah.
This chemical imbalance.
But whereas, like, as far as motivational, as far as like work motivation, I don't know. I feel like a lot of the more inane ones end up being true, because like a lot of the times to motivate you to get past the writer block or art block is to just write something shitty or just do it. And that I do find more helpful, because if you just write through like your block or whatever, eventually you'll start to write good stuff again.
Yes, I think that is true. The whole like run your depression away thing, though, like if
is
I do
dumb,
that,
and
I'm just going to be sweaty, yeah, and still depressed in that particular, yeah, instance.
Whereas, like, motivational tips for getting writing or art done, like, a lot of those work for people, which is why they get repeated a lot.
Kel, have you seen The Howling 3?
That's the one with the marsupials, so yes.
Okay.
I have seen it.
All right, so Rake and Vilecast on Twitter, at Rake and Vilecast. That's the podcast where they rank
the thing
horror
is,
movies.
I don't remember a lot of it, so I can't really answer this question, because when I saw it, I think I was in high school, and all I remember is that there were marsupials in it.
The question is only about marsupial werewolves. It is, are they genius or really whack?
Neither. Like, they're just in between. It depends on what you do with them.
Fair enough.
Like, in a world where there's also, like, werebears in fiction, or, like, I think some Laura K. Hamilton books have were-rats, like, were-marsupials? Sure.
I just love that Howling 3 is also known as Howling 3, colon, the marsupials, and the marsupials, colon, the Howling 3.
I mean, you gotta appeal to those different audiences, right? Here's one from Coltreg. He wants to know which classic horror movie monster it would be the best to smooch.
This is very hard, because I'm thinking, like, while werewolves are my favorite, like, that'd be hard to smooch because they don't got lips.
Well, am I wrong to immediately rule out Gillman?
Yeah, you are not wrong.
Okay.
Also no lips.
Also no lips. Then you get The Mummy is probably really dry. I don't know about Frankenstein, and Dracula's fangs probably get in the way.
Let's be real here. Frankenstein, probably gross.
Yeah, because he's a dead body.
Several dead bodies.
Yes. I'm trying to think of who's left. I guess Phantom of the Opera, because he's just a guy with a deformity.
Phantom of the Opera, swooping in for a late win.
Yeah. I have an answer. Yeah. I have an answer on this one.
Okay.
Obviously, once you eliminate everyone else, the only thing left is them.
No. No, you're not going to kiss those giant ants. How dare
kiss
you?
Some giant ants.
No way.
If they're the only ants big enough to kiss.
That again, they got no lips. That doesn't work.
They got no lips, but you can just give them a little smooch on that ant head, on that thorax, or right on that ant head.
No, I'm against this.
Just give a little smooch.
That's like people kissing their dog, which I am totally against.
Which, if we're going for just like give them a little like cheek kiss, then I'm gonna go with the werewolf on that one.
Werewolves got hair. Werewolves got hair. That's gross. You're gonna be picking hair out of your mouth. It's
people
gonna be gross.
Kiss their dogs all the time.
Yeah, that's also gross. I'm on record. I'm on record saying don't kiss your dog.
All right, let's move on to this question from Lamano Comic on Twitter. Lamano Del Destino, great comic.
So that's our guy, Jay Gonzo.
That's our friend, Jay Gonzo. Jay Gonzo wants to know, are hex and curse fungible terms? If not, why so?
I don't know what fungible means.
I think he means, are they interchangeable? Do they mean the same thing, or are there slight variations between a hex and a curse?
Well, curse can include swearing. So I guess curse is just a more all-encompassing term, and hex is more specific.
It would be pretty dope if we called them hex words, though.
Yeah.
All right. Now it's time for Character Corner, the part of listener questions where fictional characters ask questions. We don't have, sadly, we don't have a question from Stone Cold HCC. We have two questions from Spam Ultron, however. I'm only going to ask one of them.
I'm seeing one about Buffy that's not from Character Corner.
Yeah, we're going to get to Buffy in a second.
Okay.
Character Corner is just going to be one question, and then we're going to move ahead. I'm going to let you choose, Kel, between Spam Ultron's dating question or Spam Ultron's holiday question.
Let's go with the dating one.
All right. Spam Ultron asks, any advice for a robot trying to find love through online dating? Hashtag dick pills, hashtag cheap, hashtag justice leg.
I think they should not use OkCupid. That's my advice.
They need to get on that Tinder? They need to get on that Tinder?
They need to get on Tinder or Grindr, whatever they prefer.
Yeah, okay.
They just need to not use OkCupid.
And now here's that Buffy question. This is from CJ Tour on Twitter. Now that we've seen the high school years, how old should Buffy be in her next book?
If we are going by, because right now Dark Horse is up to season 11, I think. And if those were being consistent with how Buffy should actually be aging, she graduated from high school in 1999. So Buffy should be 38? No, 36.
All right.
But if they just mean like the next Buffy book that would be her college years, then 19-8, which is how old she was in season 4.
Here's our last question. This is from Kunzite, at Real Kunzite on Twitter.
Real Kunzite.
And I don't know if this is from Character Corner or not.
It is a Character Corner. That's one of the bad guys in Sailor Moon.
It's not a question that – I think this might just be this person's Twitter account. However, the question sounds like one that Stone Cold HCC would ask.
Okay, interesting.
The question is, should I buy the Kawasaki four-wheeler or the Polaris?
I don't know what those are.
Well, if it's from Stone Cold HCC, then definitely buy that Kawasaki Mule. That's what Stone Cold HCC loves to ride around the Broken Skull Ranch, which he no longer owns. That is very interesting. That is a Stone Cold HCC sounding question from the Kunzite Twitter account.
The plot is really thickening.
What a series of events.
We're going to close out 2017 with some revelations.
Okay. All right, that's going to do it for our Twitter questions. Kel McDonald, thank you so much for joining us on War Rocket Ajax this week. And now is the time that you could talk about your podcast, the appointed time, according to Chris.
Okay.
Where can people find you online?
All right, so you can find everything that I'm doing at kelmcdonald.com. If you specifically want to see the concept art that Chris and Matt got to see while we recorded the podcast, you have to go to my Patreon, which is patreon.com/KelMcDonald. I do two podcasts. One is called Dirty Old Ladies, which is me, Spike Trotman, and Amanda LaFrenée, and we give advice to people who want to be comic creators, both business and creative advice. And then I just started a new podcast with my buddies Joe and Molly called A Series of First Impressions, where we watch season one of different TV shows and only talk about their first season.
All right. Our guest has been Kel McDonald, werewolf expert and comics creator. Kel, thank you so much for joining us. It is always wonderful to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks once again to Kel McDonald. Absolutely check out all of her comics. They are very well thought out, and her process stuff is always fascinating to talk about. But Matt, speaking of stuff to talk about, now it's time for us to talk a little bit. What a rare turn of events.
Yes, how dare we talk? But we're going to do it because we're going to answer a question from you, the listeners. This one comes from Brendan Casey, who has this question for us. Brendan asks, hey guys, what do you think is the best take on the demon Etrigan? Kirby's, Moore's, Ennis's, or someone else's?
That's kind of tough. I want to say Kirby's, obviously, but Kirby didn't have the rhyming, and I do like the rhyming.
Yeah.
The rhyming, I believe, was introduced by Moore. And Ennis did a lot of really good stuff in that run on the demon, but I've only read maybe about half of that run. I've read that Haunted Tank story, which is great.
I'll name two more creators who did a lot to make Etrigan what the character is now by way of reintroduction in the 80s, early 90s. That is Matt Wagner.
Big MW? Yeah. See, Matt, you're little MW. He's big MW.
I'll get there someday.
Okay.
And then also Alan Grant. Alan Grant did the Etrigan backup in Action Comics Weekly.
Oh, that's true.
That a lot of people read.
I mean, the one I go back to is Kirby, right? Like, those are the stories I go back to. But I think you'd be hard-pressed to say that those were even, like, even in, like, Kirby's top three at DC.
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like it's Fourth World's number one, Omax number two, and Etrigan might be a strong number three. Well, no, Commandy is number two, Omax number three, Demons number four. It's also not like – it's kind of the forgotten Garth Ennis book because he and John McCrae were on that book for a couple years. Like, it was John Wagner for, I think, 2 or 3 years, and then Ennis and McCrae for 2 or 3 years. But nobody ever really talks about it. Like, even, like, I would argue that the best thing to come out of that run is Hitman, which nobody really talks about. Like, you know, nobody really talks about how he first showed up with a scarf in the demon during Bloodlines. That's how I say Bloodlines now.
That's good. That's good.
I don't know, Matt. I think Matt Wagner might have it.
Matt Wagner might have it. He is actually responsible for the rhyming.
Did he do it first?
He did it first. It's in that 1987 miniseries where he brought Etrigan back.
Huh. That's good stuff.
Yeah. That Matt Wagner miniseries is really good. If you have not read it, I invite you to read it. The design of Etrigan in it is weird. He didn't look like that before, and he has not really looked like that since. But it is, like, very much the introduction of the demon as we know him now.
He's also in Cosmic Odyssey, which I only mention because I think that's the only time you get to see Mike Mignola draw the demon, which is dope.
Hella dope.
Yeah, also Darkseid is there. So, you know. Got all that. It's got that good stuff. There was a time in this country, Matt, when Mike Mignola drew a DC Comics crossover.
What a time, indeed. All right, that's going to do it for our listener question segment. If you would like to send us a listener question, you can do so either on Tumblr at warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. Or you can send it to us by email at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send Every Story Ever lists and Panel President lists. If you want to sponsor the show, you can let us know there. Or if you just want to drop us a line about something else. Also, check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Also, be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts. If you like the show, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more positive reviews we get, the more we are featured there, and that is good for everybody. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us online. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net, and you will find links to all of my stuff. Chris, where can people find links to your stuff?
People can head over to the-isb.com for links to my Twitter, Tumblr, columns that I write online, and comics that you can purchase in your local comic book store. Stuff like Sword Quest, Ash vs. Army of Darkness, Deadpool Bad Blood, or X-Men 92. That one's still out there. It's in paperback. Did you get it? Matt, do we have a cause of the week before we get out of here?
I am going to send people to Rain this week. Rain is the nation's largest anti-sexual violence organization. They also have a pretty sizable effort at preventing and informing and just trying to raise some awareness about sexual harassment, which has been a huge thing in the news lately, with lots of accusations being raised about some prominent people. And those people are going to have to account and make themselves, you know, either step down from their positions or otherwise account for these actions that they have been accused of. So head over to Rain, that's Rain with two N's, .org, RAINN.org, and you can kick in some money to that cause. It's a great organization that is trying very hard to prevent sexual abuse, sexual assault, and sexual harassment. So they are worth your time and your energy and your money.
All right, that does it for this week's show. This has been War Rocket Ajax number 379. We're going to be back next week with our Thanksgiving panel president special. Matt, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, and we hopefully will see you guys next week. Until then, this has been HQC, and it's been S-Rank, and we love you.
Yeah! Stay on. Let every breed of mongrel live together.